Okay. Shalom Aleichem. Shalom Aleichem, everybody. Wow. Little did we know how the subject matter that we were studying would become so relevant, how we would be so put to the test with these things. If you remember, it's like Mamish thinking back now how when we were learning these subjects, how we discussed how when a person is put to the test, it's very difficult then to start learning the subjects and to start acquainting yourself with the concepts. And they have to be in place before that in order to be properly implemented. Remember how we said how it's easy to talk than to actually put it into practice, but if we begin talking when it's easy, then Be'ezus Hashem will be easier to put it into practice. We talked about how the more we accustom ourselves to living with a sense of Hashem's kindness, the easier it'll be to contend with situations where we feel challenged and we feel like there are difficult things going on. So my feeling was that part of the Chesed Hashem was that he timed it such that we were so involved with these subjects about learning to sense Hashem's Chesed in order to have the right perspective when suffering happens, Chas v'Shalom, and spending so much time focusing on approaching challenges, suffering, misfortune. It's my hope that we talk and put ourselves into position to have gotten through these times in the best way, and Be'ezus Hashem to continue doing that. Let's move on. We are going to continue Be'ezus Hashem. Chayvus halvavus shah b'china. But again, I want to bring home that point to feel a certain. We've been as a kehila. This past year has been so hard to find the word, but so much, whatever that word is, so much so. And just that sense, particularly at this point, of how Hashem was leading us through the hand and putting different things in place at the right times to enable us to approach it. Okay. We'll begin Shah Abchina, the first perek. Perek Rishon. We spent time on the preface to Shah Abchina. And if you don't have a sefer, you'll be fine. I'm sorry, I don't have the English version in front of me. It's Shah Abchina Perek Aleph, the first perek after the preface. In the Chlev Toiv edition, it's page Kuf Lamed. I'll wait a brief moment if people want to try to find the place, but if not, if you don't, you should be fine. It's not going to be overly text-focused. Let's begin. Omer HaMechaber, the author tells us, Chmahus HaBechinehi, the essence of this subject of Bechina, of contemplating, studying, internalizing Hashem's greatness and kindness, is his b'nein b'simanei chokhmas ha'bayri b'abruim, is to study the various signs of Hashem's wisdom that we see in his creations, v'sharom b'nefesh kifikoyach ha'koras ha'mavchin, and then to internalize it, meaning there are two stages here. Yeah, I want to break this down a little bit more. There are two subjects here. When we talk about Bechina, there are really two subjects that we're talking about. Rabbi Nehina breaks these into two separate mitzvahs asay. There is studying the chesed of Hashem, and a lot of our focus up till now has been that. And then there's studying the greatness, the wisdom of Hashem. These are two distinct tracks that often overlap because much of Hashem's wisdom goes into the chesed that he does for us. But these are essentially two tracks. The Chavis HaVavis talks about the two interchangeably. And Rabbi Nien actually sets them down as two separate mitzvahs asay. Studying Hashem's greatness and wisdom, studying the examples of it that are apparent to us in this world, plenty of those, and studying Hashem's kindness. Okay. Now, as far as that goes, whatever track you're on, here, the Chavis HaVavis is breaking that for us into two stages. First of all, is taking note of it. That's step number one, to notice. And then step number two is to internalize it, to study it further and to raise your appreciation of it. What we may say, an example, we'll talk about this perhaps as we go on, but step number one is to notice when you sit down for a meal that the meal tastes good. You actually received the chesed here. And then step number two will be getting into the details, taking note of the details, and working to turn them into a part of your consciousness, meaning you would like to get to a stage where, I'll give a funny mushel of this, a funny example of this. You know, if you are walking by a porch where the woman of the house is doing sponja and she's not aware that you're passing there, you don't see her. But as you walk under the porch, you get a good shower of sponja water on your head. So you are keenly aware of the presence of somebody there. You know, you might even yell up to them before you even saw them. You don't know what they look like. You're keenly aware of the presence of somebody there. When we talk about studying the beauty of Hashem's Bria, it's not just enough that we're just amazed by the beauty, because it could really just get stuck there. We want to bring it to the stage of sensing the one doing it. Sensing the one doing it. Like, when Avraham Avinu walked down the street, you know, if he felt a breeze blowing on his face, he said, oh, I know what Hashem is doing right now. He felt Hashem blowing on him, and that was like a certain interaction. It's like if somebody walks by you and slaps you on the back, a family member or something like that, even if they say nothing and they just quickly walk by, there was a certain communication there. Anything in Hashem's world that Avraham Avinu encountered, for him there was a certain connection. It was a certain, oh, wow, Hashem, this is something very beautiful that you did here. Or give another way of expressing it. If you step down into the kitchen and another family member has left for you breakfast on the table, or left a little treat that you like, you didn't even see the person right now, but you feel them operating with you. And that's in terms of, obviously, that's the Moshe for Hashem's chesed with us, but also if just in terms of kiviyachol, Hashem's greatness. We'll give another mundane mushel for this, but let's say you walk downstairs and you see that your son has left on the table a test of his. He got a 98. He wanted you to see it. He left before you came down. Wants you to see it. So again, you appreciate that there's an interaction here. Here, it's not necessarily that he's doing something for you, but he wants you to show you. He wants to show you something about him, and you experience it that way. It's not just that you take note of the mark and say, "Oh, it's good. My son passed his test," but you feel him trying to show you something, right? Or if it's your three-year-old kid who leaves a sloppy painting on the night table in your room because he wants you to see it. All these things are not just, okay, you see it, it's nice, good test, but there's actually a sense of connection. You feel a communication even though the other person isn't even anywhere around. Now, Hashem is around. You don't see him. But we can use these opportunities of seeing signs of Hashem's wisdom, of Hashem's greatness, and certainly signs of Hashem's chesed, not just as means of, oh wow, this is amazing, but of internalizing it in a way that you actually experience a certain connection, a certain communication. And as we'll see soon, the Chavis HaVavis is going to tell us that there actually is that intent besides the chesed itself, besides things that Hashem is doing for you. Hashem created variety in this. You know what? Why am I catching the fish before the net? Chavis HaVavis is going to tell us this in another couple of lines. Let's move a bit further. But right now we're just emphasizing the two stages of the Chavis HaVavis. First of all, noting it. Don't just walk through the world blindly. See what's going on around you. There is so much detail and wisdom surrounding you on all sides. And then number two is, take it from there into something, internalize it, and experience it as a dynamic between you and Hashem. And this is already something that will differ from person to person, even though they're both seeing the same thing. And now he continues and he says, Ki ha-chokhma, when we talk about the wisdom of Hashem, the im simoneo nechlokim babruim, you'll see it manifest in very many different ways. You want to get used to the understanding that it's all really coming from the same place. Kashemesh, asher hi'achas bi'ikoro ba'atzma. Like, let's say, for example, you've seen, like, you know, you have prisons set up in a way, different colors, that they create different scenes. And actually, it's all really just the sun of the light of the sun shining through it. So he says, when you look around in the world, let's say you walk by a beautiful garden and there are various flowers there, you're really seeing one thing. You're seeing the Chachma of Hashem, and you're seeing it manifest in a number of different ways. It's like the sun, when it shines through prisms, you'll see different colors coming through, but it's all really just the light of the sun. So, I'm skipping a little bit. Therefore, make it a habit. Get yourself used to studying the various creations of Hashem, from the small ones till the very big ones. And start noting things that you never really noticed. And you'll find this to be the case. Now, he continues, I'm going to skip a bit. To Umipnei Shabari Yisborach. Again, bear with my jumping around. I do it because I want to keep a flow in terms of the content rather than getting stuck on elaboration. And again, if you're not following with the text, don't worry about it. He continues and says, now Hashem, since Hashem is not an automatic machine, so to speak, chafetz b'maaseu, he has an agenda. Ve'inenu muchach v'loy tzorich v'loy mutba. He's not just something that operates in an inevitable way. Osa ador mishtanim zemize. He's made very great variety in the world. And he's making a profound point here. You walk by, let's say, a garden or a flower store, and you see various beautiful flowers, different shapes, right? When I was a kid, I'm a boy, maybe with girls it's a little bit more elaborate, but you know, a flower had a very, very distinct look. There was a circle with five or six petals surrounding it, and that was what a flower looked like. Now, there's so much variety when we're just talking about flowers, and I'm talking as somebody who does not really appreciate flowers, not enough, but you see all kinds of different shapes and colors and color schemes. Okay, so today they actually, we'll manipulate that to an extent. But there's, even without that, and just in the natural world of flowers, all that variety, why did Hashem do all that? First of all, you see, plan, how Hashem Kiviyachol is using his creativity to create an array of beauty. And why did he do all that variety? I mean, there could have been perhaps one type of flower to achieve the purpose. It's not, you know, you need pollination for bees. So did we need this much variety for the various purposes, the technical purposes that flowers are meant to achieve? So the Chovas Avavis continues and says, "Kedei sheteira hishtanusam al achduse v'al chavtzei b'fa'olei." He've created this variety so that we see the activity of a creative and wise Hashem. Like the Pasuk says, Hashem's desire to show himself, he did many different things in the Shemaim and in the Eretz. And now he makes a strong statement, a very profound statement. He says, Ve'elikim yedeya. And Only Hashem knows. Im ba'avura lo hayu kol abrius v'dmus achas u'tmuna echos. There could have been a lot less variety in the world. Perhaps the world's function would have worked if there weren't so many different types of species of flowers, so many different types of fruit, etc. There could have been less variety, and the world would still function. But perhaps, he suggests, that Hashem did this for this purpose, so that you should have more examples of him and be able to appreciate him more. And this is already reason for Hashem to show various forms of wisdom in the Bria. This one works this way. That one works that way. Now the Chavis Havavis, we keep getting exposed to Zira Shamayim. Whenever he makes a suggestion of why Hashem might have done something, he'll always jump back and say, I'm not presuming to actually explain Hashem's intent. So here he gives a suggestion. Perhaps the reason for all this variety is because Hashem wants to give us more examples of his ability, of his Chachma, more examples through which we can see him. But then he steps back and says, but at the end of the day, his chokhmah is above our comprehension. When we say that this is the purpose of variety, I'm just suggesting one reason of many that we may not comprehend. Ultimately, the true chokhmah is his, meaning like the Chavis Halevis is almost apologizing to Hashem for suggesting why he made variety. He's telling us, consider that it's very likely that the reason Hashem made all this variety is to provide us with more of an understanding, more opportunity to appreciate him. But having said that, he turns to Hashem and says, Hashem, I'm sorry, I'm not presuming to explain you. I'm not presuming to explain what your reasoning is. He says, Hashem has the ultimate chokhmah. Ve'en elei kami baladov. There's no Hashem other than him, and therefore I'm suggesting this very cautiously, but yet not presuming to explain Hashem's ways. If you remember, we already saw a number of examples where he does that. Comes and says, this is something you might want to understand. I'm going to suggest some reasons, but ultimately we don't know why Hashem does things. This itself is of value. Experiencing the Chavis Halevis' trepidation when he's dealing with Hashem. But we come back to his point, and this is a very hush of a point. You see so many different examples of Chachma in the Bria. Anybody who heard about Avigdor Miller a little bit, you know that you couldn't get through three shiurim without hearing a long description. Very often it was the apple, right? He was famous for his descriptions of the apple, but all kinds of other things. A person hearing these things, what we're talking about now, might think, okay, basically he's asking us to become a scientist and to start really studying the inner workings. There's a lot that can be done without coming onto that level. That level certainly will bring you to a lot of appreciation, but, okay, we might not necessarily say that that's the path everybody has to take. There are so many different areas of Avoda, and different people might put more efforts into different areas. But even without coming onto that, just again, having heard of Avigdor Miller for so many years, you get an example of how it can work by just studying with the unprofessional eye the phenomena that you see around you, and there's a lot you can appreciate. Take, for example, the fact that fruits are bright colored, but only once they ripen. Before they ripen, they are green, dark green, dull and camouflaged, because the purpose of the coloring is to advertise them and to show you, here, I'm ripe, I'm ready for picking. You can come and eat me now. And then they have bright, attractive colors. But not before they're ready. Now, it's very interesting to note that it's mamish an advertising system. Because isn't it ironic that most often the attractive, appetizing color is actually not what you eat. It's not the part you enjoy. Think of a banana. The bright yellow banana has an appetizing appeal. You're not going to eat the peel. You're going to eat the dull white flesh inside. And that's actually what tastes good. But Hashem puts an advertisement there. He wants to attract you to it. The beautiful peel of an apple. Also, here you will already eat the peel. But that's not what you're really enjoying. You're enjoying the white flesh. The bright orange peel. The bright orange peel. Also, right? Many fruits are like this. Okay, with the watermelon, it's the other way around. Fine. But note, it's a very interesting phenomenon that Hashem has an advertising system in place while at the same time protecting the fruit. So many other things to note. In a general way, again, there can be exceptions to this rule also, but in a general way, have you noticed that it's only the fruits that are ready to be eaten as is that have bright and attractive colors, while the fruits that are not ready, things that are not ready to be eaten as is, things that have to be cooked, etc., will not have those bright colors. A potato doesn't have bright, attractive colors. A cucumber does. A tomato does. These are all signs of Hashem at work. A person comes and sees these things and he can experience Hashem at work. Now, we take that the step further that the Chovas HaLevavos told us. We take it the step further and we say that variety, right? All the different types of fruits are there for what? They're there because Hashem wants to be noticed. Hashem wants you to notice His creativity. And therefore, take this another step further. Like we said, the vast majority of the world, if there's more to be eaten, hinei matoy, if there's more to be eaten, let's eat more. If there's variety, great. We know how to eat, and we are definitely going to use it right. So if there are 5 types of fruits, great. If there are 10, 15, 20, 50, even better. But what's the purpose of it? The purpose of it is, Hashem is saying, if it's all just going to begin and end with a more expanded gastrointestinal experiences, that wasn't my purpose. My purpose was to be noticed. My purpose was for it to be noticed. And therefore, if you're the person who is going to come and say, wow, in this variety, I see, so to speak, Hashem's creativity. I see Hashem's thought. I see Hashem's planning. You are actually, it's not just that you're noticing it, but you're the one who's justifying variety. This is the reason that Hashem provided that variety in order for it to be noticed. So you're the one who's actually giving it its purpose. Now, if you'll say, okay, so how many people is that going to be already? Hashem's efforts, kaviyachol, so to speak, are largely wasted because it's going to be a very few people who are actually going to do that. You know what? That doesn't matter. We've already discussed a number of times that, yes, Hashem will create universal phenomena. Hashem will do things in a way that encompasses the globe because if there's a handful of His closest who will notice it, who will learn the lesson, that justifies it all. Hashem does not need all the millions or billions of people to notice it and kiviyachol, so to speak, justify His efforts. His efforts are justified by a small, select handful of those who will say, I see what Hashem is doing. I see what Hashem is doing for me. This makes Hashem something realer in my life, something that I live with in a greater way. So, let's let that be us. Let's let that be us. This can be studied if you start approaching it this way. You yourself might suddenly notice things around you that you never realized, oh, wow, there's chash of a purpose to that. Just a couple of very interesting, again, these are simplistic, basic observations that don't really require deep scientific knowledge. But I actually like to do this. It's something that I find amazing. You take a banana and you peel it halfway, and you break off the part that's exposed, and you leave it half the peel on with the fruit still inside. And okay, you eat that half, and the other half is still fully with the peel around it, with the top part, right, broken into 3-4 strips. If you come back 20 minutes later, half hour later, you'll see that the top part went brown, while the bottom part that's still holding the banana tight is still a bright yellow. It's mamish amazing how Hashem has it set up that as long as it's still performing its function, as soon as it's finished with its function, it moves on to the next stage. The world is a massive recycling plant. Or, you know what, I'll put it in the way of Sadia Goyen said it. The world, as in the physical world, the whole range of forces of nature, is one massive food factory. All the forces of nature are working together to produce food. And therefore, when food is finished, whatever is left is put back into the system to keep things moving. That's part of the purpose of decay. The peel starts rotting. It's there to protect the fruit and hold it for you. And also, as I said before, make it appealing for you. Once it's done its job, it begins rotting. For what purpose? To move back into the cycle and to keep the system going. It becomes fertilizer. When my mother-in-law has a garden with different vegetables and things growing and flowers, she would always encourage us when eating fruits, vegetables, things like that, to simply chuck the peel out the window. Just like that, right onto the garden. Your banana peel, your apple core, whatever it is. So this is great compost. It's great compost. It was very good for the garden. Right out the window into the garden. And, you know, the first couple of times it sounded strange. You want me to throw my banana peel onto the garden? Yeah. That's what we do. It helps. It all contributes to the fertilization of the garden. That's something to note. It's something amazing. If you go further and you note just the difference between how Hashem has apples and oranges set up, right? The apple is one solid piece while the oranges are broken into compartments. You can try and imagine what it would be like if the orange was one solid, one piece like the apple, what a mess it would be to eat it. So the orange is broken into little neat bite-sized compartments that fit comfortably into your mouth because of the different way it's structured. And these things can go on and on if you will to actually notice them. Okay. We move on to the next perek, perek sheni. And here he says, he begins discussing, are we actually required to do this? Is this a requirement? This study? Or can we say, look, I'm a frum Jew, I keep mitzvahs, my level of awareness doesn't really matter, who cares? It's a nice thing, I hear the concept, but is it actually a requirement? So the Chovas Avavis begins and says, as to the question of, are we actually obligated to study Hashem's creations or not? Noima. He says, we'll say the following. Yabchina babruim, studying Hashem's creations. Vavasraya mehem lechokhmas habayra yisbarach, and using them as proofs or means of appreciating Hashem's wisdom. Anu chayovim ba min hamuskol, min hakosuv, u min hakabalah. You may remember back in the beginning of the Sefer, the Chovas Avavis set forth that there are three sources of emes that we operate with that he's going to be using throughout the Sefer. Number one is human intellect, unadulterated human intellect. Person has a lot of depth to him that can provide a lot of emes. Number two is Torah Shebiksav. And number three is Torah Shebaal Peh, the tradition that we have from Chazal that he refers to as Kabbalah. So, he says, from all of these three sources, we see that it's an actual requirement. Minamusko, it's intellectually so. I'm not going to read through it now. He just makes the argument that every form of life maximizes its abilities. And man has intellectual abilities. And if man doesn't maximize them, then he is not lowering himself to the level of a behemoth, but he's actually going lower than a behemoth. A behemoth does maximize its capacity. If man doesn't, then operates like a behemoth, meaning just basically moves through the world saying, if there's food, I'll eat it, and not another thought to it. If I have a body, I'll use it, with not another thought, then he is not living up to the level of a behemoth, because a behemoth will maximize whatever capacity it has, while man is not. So this is point number one. If Hashem gave you the ability to notice these things, Hashem put it all out there, put all of his chokhmah out there to be seen, and he gave you the ability to see it and appreciate it, then logic dictates that you have to do that. Okay. And then he brings a number of sources from Psukim and from Chazal. We're not going to go through the sources. I'll also just reiterate again that Rabbi Yehuda actually cites as a hard, fast mitzvah saseh studying Hashem's chesed, and as a separate mitzvah saseh studying Hashem's chachma. The source that he has for Hashem's chesed is the Zochatas Kol HaDerech. You should remember Hashem's treatment of you in the Midbar. Kasha Yisraim, and it's the way Hashem carried you through the Midbar and cared for you. And even when he afflicted you, it was when he was afflicting you as a child, as a parent would afflict his child for the purpose of bettering you. The source for studying Hashem's greatness, I didn't look it up at the moment. I don't remember it now, but it's another pasuk from the Torah. So that's the Chovos Halavos' point in Perek Sheni, that these are things that Hashem actually expects of us. To, yes, be living with alert eyes, to be seeing what he's busy doing around you and with you. And in Perek Shlishi, in the next Perek, he moves into breaking it down into details. We're not going to spend much time on that. We're not going to spend much time. We'll give some outside. But I want to just finish off our discussion now, or begin finishing it off, with a very profound point that Rav Avigdor Miller made about the importance of Bechina. And he said that Bechina is actually a function of Emunah. I'm not sure if I made this point in the past. If I did, then okay, it'll be a repetition. It's not going to be the only repetition. And so we have to understand that Bechina is actually a function of Emunah. And I'm going to explain this in the following way. I'll explain it in the following way. If we know that there are understandings of Hashem that are so distorted that they render a person an apikayus. A person is considered a non-believer if this is his understanding of Hashem. Meaning, you have a person who completely denies Hashem, he's obviously an apikayus. He's obviously considered a heretic. He's a non-believer. Okay? But then, let's say you have a person who believes in Hashem. He believes in Hashem, but he believes that Hashem is a physical being. Huge hands, huge eyes, right? It says in the Pasuk that Hashem has eyes and Hashem has hands. He doesn't understand that it's a metaphor, or prefers to believe that it's not a metaphor. And he believes that Hashem is a huge physical being. So we know that that's also apikoresis. This person does believe in Hashem. He believes in Hashem. But his understanding of Hashem is so distorted, it's so off that it already moves past the line. He's not believing in the right one. If you believe in a physical, you're believing in the wrong thing. I'll bring this home with another mashal that Reb Shimshon Pinker says. That he said that there was a sefer that says that the pagans, when the end of days come, they're going to come and say, they're not going to be held responsible for their mistakes, because they're going to tell Hashem, look, you know what it's like, you know, we worshiped idols, things like that, but you know what it's like? It's like an imposter who went around to various towns claiming to be the king, and they paid him homage. Now, of course, if you pay homage to somebody other than the king, if you treat him as a king, you say, long live the king, that's treason. Person should be put to death. What happens if this person came and claimed to be the king? Person came and claimed to be the king, and we paid him homage. And then the king hears about this, And the king is furious, and he wants to wipe out the whole town. They come and tell him, Your Majesty, he said he was you. By showing him that homage, we were really honoring you. And the king accepts the claim. He says, good point, and on the contrary. He takes all that. He puts the imposter to death. But as far as the people goes, on the contrary, he's able to see that they were actually honoring him. So this sefer made the point that they're going to come and say, these imposters claim to be you. Take all that honor that we showed them and understand that we really directed it at you. This is what that sefer says. So Reb Shimshon Pinkus was very, very unhappy with this, and he says, no. He says, the mashal is off. He says, the mashal would be, that's a good mashal. But in this case, the mashal would be a little different. What happens if somebody leads a little pig around on a leash, puts a crown on its head, and it's all covered with mud, and he comes from town to town and says, this is the king, and everybody yells, long live the king. And then when the king gets angry, they say, hey, we thought it was you. The king said, you thought that was me? That's even worse. You deserve an even worse punishment now. So sometimes a person thinks he has a relationship with Hashem, but he has such a wrong picture that it already turns into offensive. And this is why the extreme example of this is when a person thinks Hashem is something physical. Lahira Bavigda Miller made a very profound point, and he says this can get much subtler. It can get much subtler. Physical is already a distortion that passes the red line. It's outside the realm of belief. But you know what? A person can have distorted pictures of Hashem that don't make it that far. They're distortions. They don't render the person an apikoyris, but they're off. A person's emunah is not well developed. A person's emunah is very coarse. A person's emunah is slightly off. It's not off enough to make him an apikoyris, but it's not what it ought to be. So let's say, for example, you have a person who believes that Hashem doesn't like us. He's mean. He's really out to punish us. This could be the effect of a chinuch, if he was raised in an environment where it's all about Gehenim, and the only question is, when they put you on the spit to roast you, you know, how many degrees will it be turned on to? And whatever you do in life, it's never good enough, and it's always a question, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, forget it, you're just going to roast. The person will develop an understanding of Hashem was just out to get him and waiting to catch him wherever possible. So this person believes in Hashem, even though it's the mitzvah. He's frightened of the Gehenna he's hearing about all the time. He knows that he's not going to get away from it. The only question is, how deep will he be? And he does the mitzvahs, and he believes in Hashem. So, this person is not an apikoyris, but his emunah is quite off. He's not, he doesn't have, it's almost like to say, he's not worshipping the right one. This is not the Hashem we're talking about. But it's not so distorted, it's quite distorted, it's not, but it adds to be an apikoyris. But there's a significant problem with his emunah here. So, Rabbi Avigdor Miller said, this is why Bechina is so important. And this comes back to things that we discussed earlier as we referred to it right at the beginning of this year. Studying what Hashem did in our life, what Hashem did in the world around us, gives us a picture of a Hashem of kindness, of chesed, of beauty, of perfection. And then we have a clear emunah, we have a clear vision of who we are worshipping, who we're interacting with, who we're connecting with. And therefore, Bechina, studying the chesed of Hashem, internalizing it, together with his greatness, it's not just an issue of appreciation, but it's also an issue of having a clearer picture, which means a more enhanced emunah, a higher level of emunah in Hashem. Okay, we will end here for this week in the hope that we will be reunited in person, bekarev, in health, and in simcha. We'll stop the recording, and we'll unmute, and we'll part.